From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in February 2015 when Syracuse University made an announcement about its men's basketball program. Syracuse was self-imposing a postseason ban, meaning the team would not be eligible to play in the 2015 NCAA tournament the following month. Why was the university in trouble? Well, the NCAA Committee on Infractions found multiple violations in the men's basketball program, including, according to the New York Times, staff members doing homework for the players and players getting paid for ostensible volunteer appearances. So Syracuse decided to not to wait, for the NCAA to decide a penalty. They took themselves out, and what a savvy move that was. They ended up sitting out of postseason they probably would not have been chosen to join. That freed up the program to be eligible for the 2016 tournament. The only problem was they didn't have a very good season. Many analysts expected that Syracuse would not be selected. They were wrong. Syracuse entered the tournament with 13 losses. No Final Four team had ever had more, so they were a very long shot indeed. But by now you probably know that Jim Boeheim is getting ready to coach in his fifth Final Four on Saturday night. 24 hours later, the Syracuse women play in their Final Four. So let's talk about how we got here. My guests for the hour include Jeff DeVeronica, sports writer for the Democrat and Chronicle. One of the best in the business. Nice to see you, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Toby Motyka is here, a weekend sports anchor for 13 Wham News. Toby, nice to see you back as well.
And you as well.
All right, well, the men are going to tip at 8:49 on Saturday night, the women at 8:30 on Sunday night. I go back to that decision last year. And Toby and Jeff, you know, it was probably pretty self-serving in February 2015 to decide, hey, we'll take this year off, because they didn't have a great year last year. Jeff, would they have been in the
tournament? They weren't getting in. They finished 18-13. They were not getting in. So a lot of people criticized them for that. Like, oh, a year they're not going to get in, they self-impose. You know, in a way, they're kind of trendsetters, right? Right, Toby?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's no question. And you're right. They're not getting in the tournament that year. Then you see what Louisville does this year. And Louisville is a little different. They were a pretty good team. They were probably going to slide into this tournament, no problem. But at the same time, you also try to nip in the bud a little bit of what exactly the NCAA might do. If you self-impose something like that on yourself, who knows if the NCAA was thinking worse, might back off a little bit when you do something like that. So Syracuse, no doubt, a preemptive move because they were missing the tournament, but also hoping to lessen the blow that the NCAA was coming down with.
And, you know, I don't recall all of the details on what sort of got them in trouble. I was reading the Times story on that. Toby, Jeff, can you kind of refresh for me?
One of the big ones was Fab Mello.
Yeah.
He specifically had a paper that was resubmitted shortly after it was deemed unacceptable. After further review, it looked like it was written for him after his original copy was kind of returned.
And in fact, it was.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of the biggest, I would say, academic no-no that really has specifically been pointed out in terms of one player being named during one year and one specific incident.
And it was rewritten by the director of basketball operations, a guy named Stan Cassell. The secretary in the basketball office was in on it. She knew about it. They went and they looked through all the hard drives and saw the emails and found out that's what it was. Now, did Jim Boeheim know about that? He says absolutely not. But the NCAA has had a new rule a couple of years ago, and it's basically oversight of your program. It's your program, Jim Boeheim, and you need to be not just a CEO that's hands-off. If it's going on in your program, you need to know about it. And the lack of oversight from Boeheim is what, you know, he'll sit there and he'll tell everybody on the planet, I've never broken a violation. Well, according to the NCAA, with their new rule about lack of oversight by the head coach, he did break an NCAA violation.
Sure.
But there have been players over the years that said, I came to Syracuse because Jim Boeheim treats us like men. We have no curfew. He lets us play on the court the way we want. He kind of coaches to his talent. I mean, guys like Derek Coleman, those guys, they went to Syracuse because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now his hands off, I'm the CEO, I don't need to know every detail. You can do social media if you want. I'm not going to put any restrictions on you there. That's going to have to change to a degree.
I have to add something that is kind of funny in hindsight. They had that pep rally yesterday, and I reached out to Syracuse. We were trying to get a couple of former Section 5 players that don't even play that much with the Orange, so you'd think it might be a little easier to grab them. But the media access was no, not going to be able to get these people, and I'm looking for a reason. Oh, they're coming right from class, and they got to get right to class. And just the public class. I felt like that was something that, at least in my few years here, I know you've been covering the Orange longer than I have. They like to control their own message, but it's been very rare that it was just like, nope, they've got class. You're not talking to anybody. Sorry.
Okay, well, it sounds to me like what the NCAA is saying is, as the head of the program, you probably do know most of the stuff anyway, especially if you're a details guy, but you have to be accountable. The buck stops with you.
Absolutely.
If somebody is writing papers for your players, you ultimately are responsible. If somebody is paying a player for a volunteer appearance, you're responsible. If somebody is sending inspectors to I Square on a Sunday night, you ultimately are responsible. That's what the NCAA is saying.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is I want to listen to what Jim Boeheim said about this back in September. And now it's in the context of the fact that they're in the Final Four, it's even more interesting. He's talking to an ESPN reporter in this interview about whether he thought the penalty, his suspension, 9 games,
yes,
was excessive, and his role, et cetera, and just how much he thought that would affect them this season. This is back in September. Let's listen.
Well, you're in charge of the program. I didn't commit a violation in 8 years of investigation, and they tried to find everything that was there, and as they should. I didn't commit a violation. I'm guilty of not monitoring, which is a very nebulous term. Nobody has defined it. What does that mean?
And if you feel that you didn't personally do anything wrong, then how do you feel about being suspended coming up and the victories that were taken away
from
the
program? Well, I'm not comfortable with victories being taken away. That's from players and programs. And I think that in the cases that we lost victories, some of them identical same things happened at other schools, and victories were not taken away. And that's what's difficult with the NCAA. And the suspension of games, I think coaches who were involved in suspension and did things in their program were not suspended for more than 3 or 5 games. So I think it was excessive. But, you know, it is what it is, as they say, and you come through it and you move on, and we'll be fine. We've got a good team. We'll have a good recruiting class, and we'll get a good recruiting class next year, and we'll move on.
And we'll move on, and they did. That was September. You know, the season's getting started.
You know what I don't like, though, is that, you know, Fab Mello had been ineligible for a game or two back then, and you think Boeheim doesn't say, hey, are we going to – how did Fab get eligible? What you know, he says, well, I coach the guys who are eligible and show up for the game. He didn't have any questions about – is he doing his work? How did he get eligible? I mean, that was never asked by Jim Boeheim. That's where it's almost like a, you know, hear no evil, see no evil thing. Come on, man. You had to know something.
Yeah.
You had to have it. You didn't ask any question about how Fab got eligible. He just showed up at practice and said, hey, coach, I'm eligible. Okay, go ahead. Run out of the court and start practicing.
Keep in mind, too, how long this investigation went on. And that, I think, is part of the issue with Jim Boeheim, too, is you can plead innocent, but do you plead innocent for 6 years, 7 years? It all started, what, 2007, I think, was when the NCAA really started sniffing around. And
there was drug testing.
Right.
You know, they instituted their own drug testing policy, which not many NCAA institutions do that. It's not required. And some guys broke it. And again, Boeheim didn't know any of this. I mean, if you don't ask the question, then you don't know. But to me, it's a little presumptuous to say he didn't know anything.
There was an article written, and I wish I could remember who wrote it, in Syracuse. And I believe the title was along the lines of, the NCAA wants Jim Boeheim to be something that he never will be, and that's a policeman. And thinking, okay, yes, but they want everyone to do that. They're not singling out Jim Boeheim in this regard. That is the job now. And that is what you are required to do. And if you do not want to do it, then maybe it is time to stop doing it.
Well, and that's the difference going forward. He has to change the way he operates. And if he doesn't, they'll come back in a couple of years and get him again.
Right.
Well, listeners, if you want to jump into the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI.
Let me add one other thing, because I don't think by any stretch Syracuse is the only program out there.
Okay,
correct.
So here's an email from a listener named Tad. Tad says, yes, I'm a Syracuse fan, but come on, you're telling me this is the only school
that wrote a paper for?
They're the ones who've gotten caught so far.
I think I tweeted this or said it. If you turned over the hard drives for, whatever, 300 programs in the country, I'd say about 90% there'd be some sort of violation on there, because the NCAA Bible is huge.
Right.
So by no means, Syracuse is just the ones that got caught. And Now
and no,
they have
no
to
one
change.
Is saying, by the way, to Tad's email.
I grew up 15
no
minutes from Syracuse.
Yeah, no one
I
is saying.
I loved Syracuse basketball growing up. So
also, this is the nightmare game for the NCAA. The school they're playing, North Carolina, created academic curriculums for their students. Not they just worked. Basketball players either. Not just athletes. They just like made up curriculums that people could coach
and
through.
And they will get...
They're going to get hammered. They're going to get crushed.
Worse than Syracuse.
Correct.
Worse than Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
I think you will see... Very possibly, Roy Williams will walk away from the game when this happens because
yeah.
he will cry and literally cry because he's a very emotional coach and say, I can't stomach to come back
yeah.
from
and this is going to be another one of those plead innocence things. How much did Roy Williams know or not know? But bottom line, he is the head coach. He has to know what his players are doing in the classroom.
And a lot of this was done, though, but Dean's under Dean
long
Smith's
time,
watch,
but this
yeah.
has been going on forever. Correct.
But before I jump in to the phone calls, real briefly, you mentioned Jim Bam's going to have to do things differently. I want to listen to what he said when they made the Final Four. He talked about his own age and the way he views the game and the way he views his fifth Final Four. And he's talked about his looming retirement. I wonder if this success begets more time or if things will change. So this is Jim Boeheim on, let's see here, Sunday night.
You can go to the Final Four for these guys. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I'm so happy for them. At Syracuse, this is about the players. I've been in this 40 years. I'm 71 years old. This is for them. I feel good when we win for them and for our fans. We have great fans and for these guys. You know, I've seen enough things. I'm happy for them.
That's Jim Boeheim. Does that sound to you like a guy who is feeling like I can do this another, maybe I'll do it for another 5 years? I mean, how many more years do we expect? Jeff?
It won't be what he stated. I think he will go longer than the next 2 years. I think that 9-game suspension, which was part of the NCAA sanctions, he got a glimpse of what the future would look like without basketball, and I don't think he's going to want to give it up. And I feel bad for a guy like Mike Hopkins who's been waiting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is just in this guy's blood and his DNA, and I don't think he's going to walk away. I think this – and he even said – I never understood why someone like Dan Patrick the other day said – any chance if you're cutting down the nets Monday night, your status changes and you want to walk off into the sunset? And he said, no way. I don't understand people that want to do that. If you win, why don't you come back and win some more? I think this has only fueled the fire and got the juices going even more.
Keep in mind, too, for Jim Boeheim, he used to be known as a guy who had great regular seasons and then didn't win come tournament time. This is going to be two Final Fours now in 4 years, three if you count the year that they weren't even eligible to get in the tournament. And then, of course, in 2003, they won it all. So you're talking about the first 30 years of his career, basically making two Final Fours, and then the last 12 making three.
He's
experiencing more success later in his career.
I think it did sound genuine when he said, "I'm 71 years old, and I've done this, and I'm really happy for these kids because they haven't. Most of them haven't done it except for Cooney and Coleman." I do think that's genuine. I do think he is very sincere that he says that. But there's definitely There's always a chip. There's always been a chip, and there always will be a chip on Jim Boeheim's shoulder because people think he can't coach, which they're absolutely wrong. And I think Monday night, should they shock the world even more and win the whole thing, which I think is possible, maybe the chip will finally be removed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think Toby and Jeff are right. He is flipping the script. Syracuse is the first team that started conference play 0-4 to ever reach the Final Four. They're the first 10 seed and only the fourth double-digit seed to ever reach the Final Four. Boeheim's legacy has really changed in 2013 and 2016. Bill in Brighton. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you very much. I wanted to talk a little bit about the hypocrisy of the NCAA supervisory group here. There was an article by Juliet Masur in the New York Times this morning that went into that. North Carolina is going to suffer an egregious penalty because they've gone through 20 years of sham classes, allegedly. And the other thing is that North Carolina will not be assessed until after the Final Four. They're not going to screw up the millions of dollars the NCAA and North Carolina is getting in all this. And this sham, I'm sure, is in most of the NCAA colleges. I think the NCAA is the worst offender here, and I'd be interested in some of the comments from your people in the show.
Bill, thanks for the phone call. We've got Jeff DeVeronica from the Democrat and Chronicle, Toby Motika from 13 Wham Sports. Jeff, what do you think?
I, you know, we mentioned it earlier. Yeah, that it is. There's hypocrisy that's going on. I was just about to look this up. I think there was $1 million fine. I think Syracuse had to pay money also
to
this.
Yeah, they lost money generated from those Big East championships.
Right. So it's not like they won't the money they're making. I mean, North Carolina they will give a lot back. But it won't be as much as they make. So, but the NCAA makes that's a whole other issue. The NCAA makes millions and billions of dollars.
Right. The NCAA is not the one paying those fines.
Right.
But I didn't know this till about a week ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know that the NCAA pays up to $4,000 for all the parents of the players to go to the Final Four. Hotel accommodations and flights.
Well, that's nice because they've got
they
the money.
Afford.
Oh, no, they no doubt. But I didn't even know that happened. For years, I thought, well, how do these parents all afford it?
Sure.
Now, that's the Final Four. It's not the whole tournament.
And that leads into another point. But before I get there, just to follow up from Bill and Brighton, Chris Smith is a Forbes sports writer, essentially writes about the business of sports. And Chris Smith wrote earlier this month, March Madness, a trip to the Final Four is worth $8.5 million. Here's how they calculate it. The NCAA annually rewards conferences for their tournament performances, paying out more than $250,000 per non-championship game played by conference teams. That's over the previous 6 years. And this year's value, $260,800 per game played that's not the championship. So that six-year rolling period means this year's performances will pay out through 2022. And Chris writes, we expect a single game played this year will be worth $1.7 million in total. Multiply that by five for a trip to the Final Four, and each semifinalist has generated more than $8.5 million for its conference this year.
And there you have it. The ACC, this tournament, has made over $40 million.
Now, I just found this. In the Syracuse penalties, fine of $500 per contest played by ineligible students. So do the math. 108 was the number of vacated wins.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's 108 times 500. Syracuse must also return to the NCAA all funds it received to date through the former Big East Conference revenue sharing for its appearances in the 2011, 12, and 13 NCAA basketball tournaments. This could cost the school more than $1 million.
Joel writes, watch the film Big Time Losers. Read The Shame of College Sports from a few years ago in The Atlantic. The major, by the way, is special studies. And I think I got another long email before the program even began from a listener named Allie, who essentially said the reason that Syracuse players were in trouble or the program was in trouble is because we still have a sham of a system that doesn't pay players. We've talked about it a little bit on this program before.
Yep.
And Jeff, you're nodding right away.
I don't disagree. they deserve something. Mm-hmm. These kids can't. There's not enough time. They can't get part-time jobs at school if they need to help live. I mean, if Jim Bam gave somebody $20 to go get some food at McDonald's, violation. But his kids don't have time to between schoolwork and practice to get a part-time job. They absolutely should get some sort of stipend.
To continue to say these are student athletes is a giant hypocrisy by the NCAA.
There's always a snicker.
Yep.
Whenever they go to you see it on TV, the big media briefing where the student athletes are at with their name tags in front of them. Every single NCAA moderator introduces them. We'll now wait for the student athletes to come in. They never refer to them anything other. It's like the Masters by calling them patrons, right? They're always referred to as
flag
student
sticks,
athletes,
yes. Yeah.
Never the players.
Yeah. So. Well, Drew in Rochester on that note wants to weigh in on that subject. Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah. A few minutes ago, they mentioned that the players that the school receives a ton of money for participating in the tournaments, but yet still, as the guys were saying, the players don't reap any of that. I spoke with a Division I player yesterday who told me that they're required in basketball Division I, that they're required to be in practice 4 hours a day. They're required to be on the road for long periods of time. When do they have time to get the lessons down and the homework and other things that's required for class? So we should just pay the athletes and let them get their education at a later date once they're done with their eligibility. But it's shameful that these players are under this type of pressure to perform, and yet still we expect for them to be role model students in the classroom.
Well, let's be honest.
They
have
no benefits. Coaches get millions of dollars, all kinds of commercials. Players can't get anything.
They do get an education. The ones that want to show up to class, they get an education for free. So let's not dismiss that.
The education part of the scholarship, the guy told me that the scholarship for a four-year scholarship is paid in the first year of the student's participation in the sports program. So So they're still underpaid for the school, reaping millions of dollars.
Agreed, but the $47,000 a kid would pay in tuition and room and board at Syracuse, that you know that's not coming out. That's not coming out of their pie. It's $200,000 almost that they're not having to pay for.
$47,000. What is this, 1994? Isn't it like 60 now?
I thought it was 47, 48.
I believe it's over 60.
Some schools. I mean, I know U of R, Hobart, there's a number of schools that are 60 plus now. I don't know where Syracuse is, so I don't want to speak out of school on that.
Well, we can confidently say it's 50 or more.
It's probably a lot of money. So Drew's point, though, is that even if you factor that in, for many of these athletes, over the course of their career, they're underpaid based on what they're generating for their schools. Yes or no?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And I look back to the comments made by Shabazz Napier, I believe it was.
But
and
we're
look,
underpaid for what we generate for our
That is entirely correct.
Too, right?
That is so, a nice plug.
No, seriously.
But at the same time, that doesn't make it right. You know, a lot of people in this world right now are drastically underpaid. But these guys, as you said, they don't have time to be students. They don't have time to go get a part-time job. If you go work in the bookstore, you get some form of money at a college. And that does not require the same amount of time commitment away from your classwork, away from your dormitory, away from the library, as this does. And so, it also doesn't generate billions of dollars of revenue for the school.
They should get paid just like the kid at the bookstore for the 4 hours they put into basketball practice.
Right.
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
But and this is where Jeff and Toby can correct me if I'm wrong here, because you're in this world more than I am. I sense less buzz or momentum for anything resembling a compromise on paying athletes now than I did even
Correct.
2, 3, 5 years ago. Nobody even seems to be talking about
once,
it. Am I wrong?
Once that Northwestern case got overturned, it felt like everything just kind of fell flat.
I think in part it's because the big-time athletes get paid obscenely when they become pros.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people think that, well, they're going to get paid eventually.
Right.
I took exception to one thing he said about, well, let's not try to educate the athletes now and they can go back and get their degree years later. There's not many that are going to do that, number one. And number two, there are kids who want to get an education that mm-hmm. are still, they are student athletes. So let's not take away their opportunity to get an education. Because, you know, there are those times when a kid suffers an injury and then they don't make it to the pros. Mm-hmm. And that is tragic yep. if they haven't gone to class.
Then the big issue is, of course, do you pay the smaller sports the same as the bigger sports? Because the bigger sports are the ones that bring in revenue as opposed to the women's swim team that's going to win the national championship and you're not going to make any money off of. You get into this weird gray area, and I know people talk about slippery slope. Well, just because we haven't figured out the perfect thing to do yet doesn't mean we don't do anything. And that's the issue I have, is everyone's waiting for this be-all, end-all solution
that's
to
right.
come across.
It's going
as
to be unfair to somebody.
Correct. We need to just take steps towards it and work towards a perfect solution, because right now this is just, in my opinion, this is obscene.
Connections producer Megan Mack informs me that tuition, room, and board at Syracuse is now $55,872.
Kind of down the middle from where we were, $47,600, yeah, yeah. right?
Real affordable.
Bob in Pittsford, next up. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, guys. Enjoying the conversation.
Thanks.
And just wanted to make a couple of comments. I know the most of what I've heard, at least, has been focused on basketball, but I think your panel will agree that it really applies to all NCAA, particularly Division I sports. And I'm struck by the fact that Major League Baseball, professional sport, has minor leagues in which people play. I mean, it's not easy, and are paid, whatever their age. Whereas basketball and, football, yeah, I heard the scholarship talk and all that. But those sports serve as minor leagues recruiting for professional sports, money-making teams owned usually by billionaires and supported by taxpayer money for stadiums and things like that. So I think there's something there when particularly student-athletes who may come in on a scholarship, but if they, for whatever reason, short of injury in the sport, stop playing, don't make the team, most often they lose that scholarship. So think about those kind of options. It doesn't work for me that somehow colleges, universities, and the NCAA make millions, coaches paid millions, et cetera, et cetera. It's an industry that feeds two major professional sports. And what do we get? So I'll take your answers offline. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
He number one, the point on this extends to all sports. Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying, and mm-hmm. that's partly why we can't come to a general agreement on whether or not to pay these people or how much to pay these people, who's worth how much. But, you know, I kind of that's a side of the argument you don't often hear, is that these colleges are then helping generate revenue after college as well, I guess, is kind of the point he was trying to make. Like, there's minor leagues in baseball. You have
There's college baseball, though.
Correct.
There's big-time
college baseball. You have that choice. If you get drafted as an 18-year-old, you go to college, or do you head to the pros and work your way through the minor league system? There was a kid, local kid, Grant Heyman, who got picked, I believe, in the 11th round by the Blue Jays, decided instead to go to college, and I believe a couple years ago, after his sophomore season, mm-hmm. got picked in the 6th round, and now he's working his way through the system. So you still have that option to, you know, choose college, choose minor league sports. I think part of the reason it's there for baseball is just the wealth of positions you need, the depth of the rosters, how many pitchers there are first, you know, all those different things. But it is kind of interesting to think about the fact that, you know, that is kind of the only option for the most part. If you're going to try to play professional basketball, play professional football, that you're going to have to go through the NCAA to do so.
All right, let me grab Tim's comment. Tim writes to us from Pittsburgh. He says, is Jim Boeheim ever happy or in a good mood? I figured Devo and Toby might know. He looks and sounds miserable with the press, at least. Also, with the whole giving athletes extra help with work or tests, it doesn't only go on at D1 colleges, but at D2 and D3 colleges in sports. You would never think would be doing something like that. But that said, the college coach who says he doesn't know what's going on with his players' grades and eligibility is at best disingenuous. I think let me just toss his first part to you. Is he happy? Have you seen him happy?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have. He's actually a very different person than on the podium. On the podium, there's always that shield, right? There's mm-hmm. always the chip is there, fully visible at the podium. There have been a few times where I've gone to practice, and he knows I don't usually go to practice because it's 90 minutes from Rochester, to do certain interviews where I wanted to get a guy one-on-one for a good solid 15, 20 minutes. And the first time I did that was with Andy Routens a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for the end of practice. I'm just standing there watching. He comes over toward the end. Guys are shooting free throws or winding down. He just palms up and he says, what are you doing here? And I said, I want to talk to Andy and get some comments about his career and his life and being the son of a great player, Leo Routens. And I said, I want to talk to you too when you guys are done. He's like, sit down. He goes, let's start talking. And so we do the interview, 5 minutes maybe, and shut the recorder off. And he's like, so how are things going over there? Do you ever think the DNC will cover? Back 20 years ago when John Wallace played, most of his career, we covered every single game. They played in the Madison Square Garden on a Tuesday night. Our writer, Gary Fallison, was in Madison Square Garden. He goes, do you think that'll happen again? I said, I just don't think the budget's going to work that way. It's just not going to happen. And he's like, how are some of the guys that have moved on from the paper? What are they doing? You know, what do you talk to them much and all that? And was very nice about it. One time I had to stop by. My family lives in Canastota, which is east of Syracuse. Mm-hmm. On the way back to Rochester, I had my wife and my child, and I needed to stop by for 20 minutes and talk to some players. It was the winter time. And they were in the lobby to the gymnasium, and the PR director said, I said, honey, you guys have to wait out here. And my daughter was in a stroller, and she said, you can come in. The PR director goes, they can come into the gym. So my wife goes, okay, I'll come into the gym. I get to see some of the players in Jim Boeheim from afar. And Boeheim walks over to us and says, hey, how are you? He's like, who's this? It's my wife. This is my baby's in there sleeping. Totally different than you see him behind the podium.
Nice story, Toby.
You can blame TV cameras for this stuff, generally speaking. Scrums and press conferences are very insincere. You have people, you know, interrupting other people to try to get their questions in. You're dealing with people you know, people you don't know. It's not a good format. Now, to say this, Jim Boeheim is particularly curmudgeon-y in these press conferences. He could be a little less abrasive at times.
Always better in front of the national
media. It's very, very true. I have my theories for why he's like that in these press conferences, but I have heard stories. I haven't had the same kind of personal experiences as Jeff, but I was just with the sports director from WSTM out in Syracuse, Nico Tamurian, who does a lot of charity stuff, and he's a Syracuse guy. And he sat next to Jim Boeheim at a gala once in a charity event, and he was the MC for it, and Jim was the guest of honor. And he said it was very awkward at first. He didn't know what to say with him. And he had heard Jim like golf a lot. So he brought up golf, said, I got my first eagle the other day, and that Boeheim turned to him and lit up and wouldn't shut up about golf for the rest of the time that they were there all night long. So I always feel like, and as a TV guy, your best interviews are often done after you put the camera down, you go up and talk to somebody for a couple of hours, and you say, hey, next week, you mind if I sit down with you? Sure. It always kind of lessens the tension. So I think that the cameras are largely to blame, the sheer amount of them. But I've absolutely heard plenty of stories about Jim Boeheim being very, very happy when he's not dealing with us.
But I've always said, though, I mean, he's got a great job. Mm-hmm. He's rich. He's got job security. We've seen that for sure over the last few years. I mean, they're never going to get rid of him unless he wants to go now. Beautiful wife, beautiful family. If there's anybody that should be smiling ear to ear, it's Jim Boeheim.
And I did say on air the other day when he was like, I'm just so happy for this team. We got into the tournament. I was like, I promise he's smiling inside.
Well, even some of the players. Sometimes I'm looking at Cooney and Benajay on the podium. I'm like, these guys, it's like they're going to the dentist here. I'm like, come on, light up a little bit. You're going to the Final Four, and there's just not that excitement.
Yeah.
But Boeheim is certainly, and he's had his critics over the years, so I understand why he does have that shield, but he does drop it down when the cameras are not rolling.
Well, I'm late for a break, and speaking of the flavor on campus, after this break I want to bring in Kim Brown, the communications director for the Syracuse University Alumni Association, for a little flavor on what it's like at Syracuse to have both teams in the Final Four. But the last thing I would just say on Boeheim is this. If you're going to be a curmudgeon, and it's fine. I mean, I think I agree with everything I just heard. My favorite curmudgeon is the model of Greg Popovich, who, you know, he's become a legend for his halftime interviews, which are the dumbest interviews in all of sports. You get nothing out of them. And Popovich has made an art form of not only saying nothing, but being condescending. And you might be thinking, why is that a good thing? It's not always a good thing, but it can be really funny. He also exposes how silly the whole routine is. He's been doing it with Craig Sager for years, but now that Craig Sager is in a fight for his life with cancer, you know, you've seen some real beautiful stuff from Popovich, even in the curmudgeonly guys. And I'd like to think that with Boeheim, he's that way, you know, away from that setting too. And I think Jeff's story helps illustrate that maybe that's the case. Let's get a short break. We'll bring in Kim Brown, talk more with Jeff DeVeronica, sports writer from the Democrat and Chronicle, Toby Motika, weekend sports anchor for 13 Wham News. More straight ahead. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections. Can you believe this will be the first time that Open Tuning's host Scott Regan joins me in studio? Scott joins me because he's a musician and an artist, and it's the third Sights and Sound show at the Little Theater's Art Gallery in their cafe. Scott and a number of other musicians and artists are going to display their work, and we will talk about their artistic backgrounds.
In Indiana, there's an epidemic of drug abuse.
Let's see how it could.
We take you into a house where nearly everyone is addicted to the painkiller Opana.
I'm so ashamed. I pack so much shame, and I'm going to cry.
No.
I pack so much shame from it. I do.
A closer look at how drugs and HIV took hold of Austin, Indiana, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A little dessert for the broccoli of all the news and heavy stories we've been covering. Talking about Syracuse, not only Syracuse in the Final Four, it's not just basketball. We're talking about the business of it and frankly, the unlikely success, what got us here. Jeff and Toby have been helping us understand the process that led here, starting with the sanctions, the self-imposed ban, the smart and savvy idea of taking that ban last year, and then this year, all the success they've had in the tournament when a lot of people didn't think they'd even get in. Kim Brown is on the line with us. She's the communications director for the Syracuse University Alumni Association, former television media reporter herself, so she understands the media world, she understands the Syracuse world, and she is now the biggest Syracuse fangirl in the world. Kim, nice to talk to you. How are things for you guys?
Oh, they're very orange, Evan. Very, very orange. I'm quite grateful that Houston is an entirely different weather scheme than Chicago was, because I have officially run out of orange attire. So I'm glad to be able to be heading to warmer climates tomorrow. I think we've been wearing orange for 2 weeks straight in our office here, in the alumni office. So it's exciting. It's unbelievable. I was a freshman at Syracuse in 2003 when we know what happened in 2003. So it's kind of cool to relive it here, you know, as we head into Final Four weekend.
Kim, do you have any sense for how this actually impacts Syracuse? I mean, in some ways that's not quantifiable, but when you talk about, well, it's going to impact the basketball program, success begets success, they'll have even more successful recruiting, I'm sure. But when it comes to alumni, I mean, are people more giving? Do people say, you know what, I'm in such a good mood, here's a check? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense for the actual impact at Syracuse.
Yeah, well, I think our fundraisers would love that. I think if you tapped into, I was standing in Chicago when we won Sunday night, and I had an alum behind me, and he's screaming, just every athlete whoever played for Syracuse, I love Derek Coleman, I love Jim Brown, just over and over again. And I'm thinking, if that translated into dollars, we'd be doing pretty well right now. But I think one thing it's important to note, a couple impacts to Syracuse University. One is really for our women's team. We can't forget that they're off to the Final Four, too, for the first time in history. And so for a recruiting standpoint for Coach Hildman, for Q, as we call him, I mean, this is huge for women's basketball. So we are thrilled for our women heading to Indianapolis. I love, there was a comment yesterday at the pep rally, you know, our Cinderella here, they don't wear slippers. They wear sneakers. These women are rock stars. So that's, you know, an important thing to remember as well with our women's team. But here on campus, I mean, one thing that we're seeing that we didn't have in 2003, and I'm aging myself now, but social media, it has exploded. We had one analysis done by a social media intelligence platform. They said Syracuse was the topic of 31.5% of the March Madness mentions on Twitter, based, and that's Notre Dame was about 9.5%. So we were proud about that. The top 10 hashtags used during the weekend, Syracuse had 3 of the top 10 hashtags. So we're seeing an incredible boost to our social media networks, our flagship channels, our athletics channels, our alumni channels. And we're launching this new hashtag #IBleedOrange campaign, which soft launched yesterday and full launched today, and already the posts that are coming in are incredible. So that, obviously, once it gets out into the social sphere, it just spreads. So alumni are getting in on that. Our students are getting in on that. And the other thing, too, you know, a lot of folks, and you hate to say it, but there's folks out there who think Syracuse is a public school somewhere in upstate New York. And you know what? We're not. We're kind of a big deal, and we're feeling it. And so when we get 2 teams off to the Final Four, I mean, we are the basketball capital of the world right now. I feel comfortable saying that. And that's a cool thing to be part of.
I grew up, Kim, this is Jeff DeVeronica from the newspaper in Rochester. I grew up in Canastota, which is about 18 miles from the heart of Syracuse. And, you know, my brother-in-law, my brother, my sister-in-law, my niece, I know what it's like and what it means for the people of Central New York. I honestly think it's more so than in Rochester than the Buffalo Bills fans. You know, the Buffalo Bills get off to a great start. They look like they're going to be in the playoffs. Everyone sticks their chest out a little bit more. Everyone's a little more excited. In Syracuse, it's even bigger there. So it's really great for the region, not only the region, but the city of Syracuse and the people of the suburbs. It's such a big deal, and that's such a way of life. I mean, it's really cool.
And I wanted to just add something quickly as well. Something that I've noticed with Syracuse fans, being more of an outsider than Jeff, I grew up mostly in Binghamton, which is obviously part of Cuse Nation, but not as much as directly in Central New York. But one thing I've noticed about Syracuse fans in general is Bills fans will puff their chests out, but they will also destroy their team. They will get down on their team. They will get mad at their team. I feel like Syracuse fans will defend their team no matter what. And that's really quite admirable. When Syracuse has lost 5 out of 6 games, you don't just get that same feeling of pessimism, and you don't feel like everyone's down on them. You still feel like they're, whatever happens, go Orange. And that's something that's really contagious with this fan base.
You agree with that, Kim?
And that's what Coach Boeheim said yesterday, that it's so nice to be at our pep rally yesterday in the presence of people who are not the naysayers, who knew all along that we could do this.
He'd been dealing with us all week, yeah.
Right? There's no outside noise in this Manly Fieldhouse right now, and so that's a really cool thing. It's so exciting. I just had lunch with a student. She's a senior here, and I said, so are you going to Houston? And she said, no, why would I go to Houston? And she's like, I want to be here. I want to be on campus. This place is going to be amazing. And so it really unites. And now, obviously, we have 3 buses of students who, bless their hearts, are hopping on a bus tonight, 25-hour drive to Houston. I can't even imagine what that ride back will be on Tuesday morning. But I really, you know, some students want to head there, but others just, they want to be here and they want to experience what it's like to have two teams heading to the Final Four.
Are they staying even if Syracuse loses?
Oh, I don't think so.
She was just being confident. Okay. She was just being a confident Orange fan.
Yeah, come on. That's a confident fan.
I was just being my confident self. I tell you, 2 weeks of Orange, I'm going all the way. They'll leave on Sunday morning if that were to be the case, but that's not going to. So they'll head back on Tuesday morning. And I'm sure their parents are thinking, oh, they're missing classes. But you know what? This is just, it's once in a lifetime, really, for these students. So they're thrilled about it.
All right, Kim, I'll let you go in just 1 second here. But I got to say, if you're a Syracuse student now, it really must be electric on campus. I even remember being a college student at Ohio University, and I'm from the Cleveland area, and my Cleveland Indians were in the World Series. I'm sorry, this is before they were in the World Series. They had to beat, sorry Yankees fans, the New York Yankees, which is the sweetest thing. It's like the cherry on top of the cherry. And but of course, it took an opposite field Sandy Alomar home run against Mariano Rivera. And I remember being in a dorm room, in a dorm building where everyone went out into the common area, and it was just like a human pile of happiness when that happened. But they didn't even win the game yet. So I can't imagine what it is like at Syracuse, Kim. But my last question for you is, you know, I know you've heard us talking about Coach Boeheim, and he's larger than life there for all the reasons that we have been talking about. And as the communications director for the Syracuse University Alumni Association, I'm not going to grill you on Jim Boeheim. I just want to ask you, on campus, you know, it's not, I guess I'm not asking, does he get a pass for the violations, et cetera? Is it just that, has he sort of overcome that? Do you get the sense that he is appreciated there? And, you know, do you get a sense for what you think his legacy will be whenever he does decide to retire?
Yeah, I would say it's nothing but appreciation. You know, obviously what happened is unfortunate, but it's in our past. And that's kind of the feeling that I got yesterday standing at that pep rally, seeing how he's been received. You know, when he walked into the lobby of the hotel in Chicago, it really is just, all hail Jim Boeheim. So it's really appreciating him for what he has done for so many years as an alum of our university. You know, the joke is just how long he has been here, but his legacy is one that it's just incredible. So we appreciate him, and of course we're thrilled for Mike Hopkins as well, as another alum of Syracuse University. So it's exciting for us now, and I feel like we've kind of moved past some of those instances, and now we move forward and we look ahead to the weekend. We can't wait.
I wonder if Ed McMahon thought he was ever going to host the Tonight Show, and he just kept waiting. Like Mike Hopkins is Ed McMahon there. You know, Jim Boeheim is, you know, has to.
It's not the worst gig, you know.
It's not the worst gig. All Mike Hopkins has to say is, yes, yes. It is a pretty good gig. When are you going, Kim? You going tomorrow?
Oh, I am flying out at 6 a.m. tomorrow, so I will be in lovely shape tomorrow evening. But no, we're heading down to Atlanta and then over to Houston. So get a little rest on the plane, and we've got events going all weekend. So it's a great time to be Orange.
Have fun. The men Saturday night at 8:49. The women Sunday night 8:30 in Indianapolis. Kim Brown, the communications director for the Syracuse University Alumni Association. Thanks for taking the time for the program, Kim.
Love it. Thanks, Evan. Thanks, all.
All right.
When you find the Syracuse bars too, there. I mean, it really is. I think I wrote this. It is like Walt. It's like the biggest. Basketball playground, the Final Four city. It's really cool. Everyone is into basketball that's there, so it's kind of neat.
Let me grab Garrett in Rochester, who's been waiting to join the conversation with Toby Motika from 13 Wham News and Jeff DeVeronica, sports writer for the Democrat and Chronicle. Go ahead, Garrett.
Hi, Evan. It's my first time calling in, actually, to a radio program ever, so I just wanted to say thanks for putting on the show.
There you go. No problem.
My comment or question is this. I'm a chiropractor, and I've worked with athletes and going through college at University of Buffalo and New York Chiropractic College. I saw student athletes putting in a lot of time to practice. I remember back in UB, I lived on the floor with a bunch of football guys who were up every day at, you know, 5 in the morning to do weight training programs, and then after classes for, you know, on-field practices. It was probably a 4-hour commitment at least every day. What I'm wondering is, as time has gone on, with college sports becoming so much more popular and perhaps more lucrative for colleges, especially D1 schools, Has that time commitment changed? So in the past, were they still putting in that much amount of time? And if so, when did they kind of switch from being students playing a sport, you know, to being athletes going to school? And is the time commitment necessary? Are they being pushed too hard to lose focus from what they're doing on campus as students? And in fact, maybe even leading them to be more prone to injury, having more overuse injuries and things like that. So do they need to be paid for this extra time they're putting in, or is it maybe a question of there's just too much time?
Yeah, is it out of balance? Garrett, thanks for the phone call. It's a very interesting question. The premise has to be correct. I mean, at some point, the shift had to be happening. I just don't know. He's trying to figure out when that might have been.
It's tough to pinpoint when it happened. Yeah. But you know, there's these kids, they do have some downtime. I mean, and I think from my experience covering high school sports, and I'm sure it carries over to these kids that go to college and play sports, is that most of the kids that I've found, when they're busy enough because of their sports, they're better students. They have to prioritize their time a lot better. It's a lot tighter, so they organize things better. And they know they have very little time for homework, so they make time for it. So I found that, and again, there are assigned study halls that these kids have to go to. These student-athletes will have to go and work with tutors. So it's almost built in that they're going to have time. They're made to have time for studies.
I will say this, in terms of time commitment, I was never a Division I athlete, so I don't know, but back in 2002, my most intense season was just swimming, as a varsity swimmer, and my schedule was practice from, weightlifting from 5:30 to 6:30 a.m., pool from 6:45 to 7:45, school from 7:50 to 2:20, or 2:40, practice from 3:30 to 6, and so that's just high school varsity swim practice. It left you almost no time to sleep, eat, and do homework, let alone if you had a big test coming up the next day. You found the time, but there was not a wealth of it. And so part of what makes this difficult is a lot of these student-athletes are getting these scholarships they wouldn't have gotten based on their academics. They're not necessarily the best students. They need to be in an environment where they learn to become better students and learn to become more self-sufficient in that regards. And that is why these NCAA programs do, I think, need to police their programs better, because these students need guidance. They're not automatically going to take that small amount of free time they have and open up a book as opposed to jump on the Xbox.
But here's something that parents, any parent who's got young athletes in middle school, in high school, can relate to. To Garrett's point about a lack of balance, it's not just at the NCAA level.
Right.
And by the way, if it's true that there's a lack of balance, or it's hard to find time for, you know, a broadly balanced college life for a college athlete, whether it's studies and a social life and other academics and maybe a job, et cetera, that's not really going to happen. That's not just happening there. I mean, talk to any parent who's got a kid who wants to play travel soccer, and what used to be one team, now you have to be on three teams. Mm-hmm. Now it has to be year-round. It is expensive. You're driving an hour one way to play a game, and then the next morning, an hour in another direction. And if you stop doing it, some kid will fill that slot. So if Syracuse said, we want to try to create balance for our players and pull it back, the rest of the NCAA schools that they're competing with in the ACC and elsewhere are not doing that.
They're going to say, go right ahead.
I'm not saying there's a good solution. It's just...
You're absolutely... It's a great point, because it goes right down to youth sports.
And it's out of control in some way.
It absolutely is.
You know, that lack of balance. Reed in Rochester. Go ahead, Reed.
Evan, enjoy the program.
Thanks.
Jeff, I appreciated your comments about the difference between Coach Boeheim's personality when you meet him in person or hear him in person, and the pressers, which he clearly doesn't like. But he actually has a very dry sense of humor, and he's a funny guy. But he's irascible in the pressers. I think after 40 years, he just doesn't enjoy that part of the experience.
Good word, irascible. Very good word.
Yeah. I wanted to make one comment, though, just to keep the whole Syracuse NCAA issue in context. There is a lot of massive academic fraud going on in Division I sports. I mean, I think if you go to the big money schools, Kentucky, Alabama, even Ohio State, you'll find that academics are an afterthought. I mean, Evan, you just mentioned balance. I think at some schools, there was a quote from an Ohio State player recently, Cardale Jones, who said that he didn't go to Ohio State to play school. Well, when you compare some of these institutions where clearly there's not a lot of learning going on, at Kentucky, kids come in, if they go to class, I'd be surprised. They study, quote-unquote, study for 4 months, and then they're off to the NBA. I mean, it literally is a semi-professional enterprise. So in that context, did Syracuse have violations? Yes. Should they take responsibility? Yes. You can't pay kids to ref Y games. It's against the rules. And clearly you can't add footnotes or, excessively assist a player like, who spoke Portuguese, by the way, like Fab Mello. But compared to the other problems in with the, you know, time commitments that players have to make in Division I sports to the sports activities, I think the Syracuse violations were really minor, and the penalties were just way over the top. I mean, vacating 100 games, come on.
Yeah, and Reed, thanks for the phone call. I always think the vacating wins is silly. I mean, like, for all the people who experience those wins, those aren't wins anyway. It's kind of silly.
And they certainly made an example of Syracuse. Right. I don't think anyone would doubt that, and that's why.
I always feel less bad for the people in the past because they know they won those games. Whether or not the record books are going to say it, they know they won those games. The people who I always end up feeling bad for are the Trevor Cooneys and Mike Benajays of the world and the Tyler Robersons who are like, wait, what? I wasn't with this program in 2007, and I'm the one who has to sit on the sidelines because of something you did 8 years ago.
But they did know coming in that there were investigations.
Correct. Yeah, so.
Our thanks to Vicky, a Go Cuse fan who emailed the program with just a correction, and we did have an outdated statistic. Syracuse 55. Tuition room board fees, $65,000.
There it is.
Not 55. 65.
Oh boy. Ding, 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 winner.
So there you go.
It'll be 78 in 5 years.
We haven't given enough credit to these players. I give these guys credit.
That's
these
a great way to end the conversation.
Have been resilient. They've kept their eye on the prize despite all the skeptics and naysayers and waiting for Bayham's suspension. Give these young men credit. They really have, and I didn't think they deserved to get in. I thought they underachieved. But they got in, and they've made the most of it. So there's a lesson there.
And if I have one question I can ask at the end of the year, it's why'd you stop recruiting Thomas Bryant? Can you imagine if they had him?
Who gets the last laugh right now?
Yeah, it's true. Syracuse is still rolling.
To the extent that we feel like we can know players and get a sense of them, this is a very likable team, and it'll be fun to watch them on Saturday night in the Final Four. Our thanks to Toby Motika from 13 Wham Sports. Toby's got his own... he plays zone defense at home now.
Man-to-man. He's outnumbered.
You can't. And so he's learned the zone from Jim Boeheim. He's had to with the three girls. Thank you.
Could use four teammates.
Yes. Jeff P. Veronica, great to see you as well. Keep up the great work for the Democrat and Chronicle. Thanks for being
here.
Thanks for all the great phone calls. Thanks to Val LaBanca, the engineer of the program, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.